broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman, Eldon Stahl, live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the network refused to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for April the 15th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our 2 of 2, and sadly it is tax day, a day of abuse and infamy for literally 100 years now. We got to call a halt to the con game and wake up and reject the communist plank called income tax, folks. Yes, we do. So we've been talking about that with Eldon Stahl and Brian Rust last hour. This hour, I want to talk about a couple of topics that are really important. State nullification is one of them. Talking about protecting law enforcement and understanding the proper role of law enforcement, etc., is another. But before we get to that, I went to the newamerican.com, incredible magazine, one of my favorites. They have some of the best in-depth, detailed reporting of anybody. And I saw this headline, and I want Eldon to respond to this first because it's just awesome. And it really kind of articulates, in my opinion, the value of the checks and balances that America is known for. Now, I know we haven't been using the checks and balances properly, and that's why we're in trouble. But the checks and balances are vertical and horizontal. So you got the three branches of government: executive, judicial, legislative. Those are three direct separations of power. And then you've got also the states versus the federal government, the county versus the states. So you've got separations, jurisdictional boundaries, and et cetera, all through the system. Brilliant. By the founding fathers. But we need to insist on those checks and balances. And if we don't, we lose them. And if we do, we certainly have the authority and the power. Remember, government derives its just power from the consent of we the people or the governed. And so any power they have that we didn't give them consent for is not just. All right? And that's really the kind of quintessential point to understand here. Nevertheless, here's the headline that really highlights this, in my opinion, in a literal way. It's from the New American, thenewamerican.com. Headline says, COVID turned governors into petty tyrants. Now legislatures want the power back. Luis Miguel writes the piece for the New American. Incredible headline. Eldon?
Well, it's kind of like trying to put the genie back in the bottle, but it is possible. Legislatures, now this has happened over probably decades, passed various acts that said, you know, if there's an emergency, we trust the governor. He wouldn't abuse this power, and he can basically, or she, suspend laws passed by the legislature and act as if, he or she is a king or queen without regard to limitations on their power. That was the assurance back at the time. Of course, we know that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we found that out firsthand last year, did we not? Now legislators are saying, let's put some limitations on this at various degrees in various states. That depends on us, really, how much we insist that it be, because if we don't care whether we have a Republican form of government, if we just say, you know what, I kind of like having a king, electing state legislators for show, just to be there for props rather than to actually represent me and my protect my liberties, then that's what we'll have. But if people actually insist on it, then we'll go back to some sense of sanity with regard to form of government and how it treats our liberties.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate and I agree with Eldon that it's kind of a hodgepodge and it's like putting the genie back in the bottle. I concur with the point. However, I really love Eldon's point that it is possible. And I know it'll take a lot of hard work and there'll be people kicking and screaming temper tantrums like little kids when you deny them their power. But nevertheless, it can and it must be done for the safety and for the good of the republic, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the reason that I started with a headline, COVID turned governors into petty tyrants, now legislatures want to take their power back, is because really the way to go about it is to use some of the principles of the checks and balances that our founders gave us. And state nullification, an idea deeply embedded in American history, TheNewAmerican.com, another article, but along the same lines, really, because, hey, legislatures are getting jealous. They want their power back, and they can do so by nullifying a lot of what the governors and or the federal government is doing. I think nullification is a peaceful process. It is a well-documented, deeply embedded idea, principle, that was really part of American history to rein in petty tyrants, to separate powers, to chain individuals and small groups down by the Constitution to prevent them from gaining too much power. Eldon.
Yeah, and there's a lot of misconception or misrepresentation about nullification, how the founders viewed that. And basically what it meant, at least in their minds, was, well, we have a constitution that defines the meets and bounds of government power. We swear an oath to uphold those meets and bounds. And if we do not insist that those limitations be enforced, then we're not doing our duty upholding our oath. That can apply to the, of course, the federal officers, but all officers at all levels, they have an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution. Of course, the state officers, they also have an oath to uphold the state constitution. So when you have, many times we talk about nullification as enforcing the U.S. Constitution, but it can also be used to enforce the state constitution and say, you know, Mr. Governor, Mrs. Governor, you don't have that power. You can't just make a law and force everybody to obey it and call it something else to make it sound better. You can't do that.
Now, I think it's really hard to get states to push back against the federal government and to get the legislative bodies to push back against their governors. And the reason I think that it's really hard is money. Let me give you an example. Ammon Bundy's in a big fight in the state of Idaho right now because Governor Brad Little up there literally suspended liberty and created a state of emergency and then an extreme state of emergency in Idaho over the COVID. And because he worked with the federal government and carried out their bidding on that, he got $8.1 billion in the state of Idaho for COVID funding. And then he basically declared that, hey, that money, there's no laws governing the money because it came through this unique emergency channel. And therefore, the governor can dispense of that money at his pleasure. $8.1 billion for the little state of Idaho. Literally 1.5 million people kind of a thing. And he basically then claims he can do whatever he wants with it. And so he's putting together kind of a team, his own hand cherry-picked people, to spend the cash. It's very difficult to counter that, Eldon.
That is difficult, but it's not impossible. If we insist that, because what has to happen is the people need to be educated to the point where they realize that that money is being used against their interest. So it doesn't really matter how much money it is. But we got to say, no, that money is being used to purchase our liberties. Our liberties are not for sale. So we're going to insist that our liberties be respected, and you can take a hike. And, we'll get a new governor. I don't care. And we'll just we'll move on with our lives. And we don't want any form of money being used to, say, push lockdowns or whatever it might be. That's the attitude people need to have. Our freedoms are not for sale.
There's no doubt about it. I think that the checks and balances are brilliantly put in place by the founders. And I think state nullification is one of those checks and balances to say, hey, you know what? Federal government, you don't have any authority or any right to give money you don't have to states. States by law have to have balanced budgets. They're balancing their budgets by turning on the federal spigot of dollars. And the federal government has no authority to give money that it doesn't even have. It's in debt to its eyeballs. What, $30 trillion on the books with a T? And if you do unfunded liabilities and everything else, you're getting close to $300 trillion. It's not sustainable. We don't have it. And we can't continue to drink from the economic bottle, comparing it to alcoholism, from the economic bottle of false prosperity. All we're doing is basically delaying the hangover, and the longer we delay it, the worse it'll be when we're forced to account. Eldon. All right, we'll try to get Eldon back. In the meantime, though, so forced to account is critical, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what the checks and balances are all about. That's what nullification is all about, this deeply embedded American historical principle of dividing power between the legislative, the judicial, the executive, between the states, between the federal, between the counties, rejecting global government altogether. These are serious, serious principles that can bless America and bless Americans if we let it, right? I think these checks and balances are critical to the restoration of the republic, Eldon.
Yeah, definitely. If we don't have checks on the growth of power, of course, we're going to have power growing indefinitely. And that's, unfortunately, largely what we see at the federal level. People are letting, well, you know, one thing I point out to folks is if you complain about Congress selling their votes, don't be selling your own votes. So, you know, don't let your own vote be bought off. It goes both ways.
Well, that's a poignant reality check for folks, right? What are you selling your votes for? Those who will bring home the bacon? Those who will uphold the sacred cause of liberty? Those who will insist on the checks and balances that made America great? Who are you voting for? And what drives your vote? Fair questions from Eldon Stahl. We'll talk more in seconds on your radio.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. We're with Eldon Stahl, John Birch Society. He's a field director doing a great job helping people understand the sacred cause of liberty. TheNewAmerican.com, great, great stuff. We're talking about nullification, an idea deeply embedded in American history. This is something I really think the only way to gain ground on this, though, is to have the American people educated enough and insisting on these divisions of power vertically and horizontally across the republic. Without that education, without the people supporting it, it's going to be a row to hoe, to say the least. But if enough people demanded it, you know what? If enough people insisted on it, it would happen. And that's your primary point, right, Eldon?
Well, yes. That's obviously it takes education, it takes understanding of the people to enforce that and to push for that. But yeah, we have the government that we insist upon. And if we don't understand the rules that are in the Constitution, then of course government's not going to play by the rules because we don't know the rules. How can we insist that they be abided by?
All right, there you have it. Very interesting stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Great articles from The New American. And, you know, I really want to kind of point out part of the checks and balances in America relate to law enforcement. And I want to be very careful with the word enforcement or law enforcement because they're really not supposed to enforce laws. I think that name really does disservice to the police. Okay, I get that enforcement's necessary, but in a constitutional republic, in a moral society, which the founders said, in a religious society, which the founders said, you know what? Our government, our constitution is only created for those who are moral and religious. It will not do for any other. And when Alexis de Tocqueville said, hey, America's great because America's good, he meant the morality of the people. In other words, primarily the people are self-governed. If they're the sovereigns, if they're the ones that have the power given to them by Almighty God, and then they delegate that power by the consent of the governed to government jurisdictions, then it's wise to understand that we, the people, need to be self-governed. Once in a while, somebody gets out of control, but it's the exception, not the rule, is the point. And if we're self-governed individuals, the real need for police is very limited, very little. But it must be because there's sometimes bad actors, bad apples, people that run amok. Anyway, part of the checks and balance in America is if you're self-governed, there's not really a need for the cops. But the cops kind of become your buddy. You see them in the street. You're like, hey, sir, how you doing? Hope things are going well. Nice to see you again. And that's really about it. But they become a stabilizing presence in society in that the bad actors know, hey, there's somebody keeping an eye on us all the time. Well, that's critically important in America. Now, there's all these calls for defunding of the cops. I think it's nonsensical insanity. Nevertheless, that's what they're pushing for. The people who are least governed want to get rid of the police. Very strange. Self-governed people are like, hey, I'm fine with the police being here. They're not abusing me. I'm not doing anything that I shouldn't do anyway. But nevertheless, I think one of the great checks and balances is law enforcement. And I would say peace officers is the term that I like to use. But support for law enforcement officers, another great article in The New American. Eldon?
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that we see, the people that are pushing for defunding the police, they're talking about local police, the most accountable to you and me. They're not talking about defunding the FBI, defunding the U.S. Marshals, the ATF, or other federal organizations that have basically police power and are enforcing federal law. They're talking about defunding the local county sheriff's office, defunding your local police department. Those are things that if they do, of course, from time to time, have people that do things as they should, they're the most accountable to you and me. Those are the ones they want to defund.
Well, and I think we need the police. Yeah. I think we can work properly with the police. And I think what we need to do is provide proper training and proper support for the police. And I think government has intentionally, and those who want to destroy the proper role of government, they've intentionally driven a wedge between we, the people, and the police, haven't they?
Yeah, well, look at what's gone on this last year with the COVID thing. The local the state governments, health departments have asked police departments and sheriff's offices to enforce laws that really erode the trust that should exist between the people and the local police. They're asked to enforce things that are very arbitrary, that are not laws, and that are not should not really be even considered as crimes. They're just edicts from some bureaucracy or from the governor or something like that. That really goes back in my
mind to this insurrection that they claim happened at the Capitol on January 6th. Look, one of the big things that we need to understand is there's not a collective in America where we say everyone's guilty or everyone's innocent. Okay, with each crime, there needs to be a victim. And so for somebody who went to the Capitol and who peacefully prayed and didn't go in, there's no crime. For those who even went into the Capitol peacefully, maybe they shouldn't have been there. That might be a discussion we can have. But if they didn't hurt anybody or harm anybody, where's the victim? And so I think that there's very few people, even in that whole scenario on January 6th, that you could say committed a crime. And we got to think of crimes a little bit more appropriately. It's not just because the government says it's a crime. A crime is where there's a victim. And I don't know that there's such a thing as a victimless crime. It's kind of an interesting concept. But I think we need to start there in our understanding, don't we, Eldon?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there are some things that I would counter. Some people say are victimless crimes. But, you know, prostitution or drug use comes to mind, you know, but I guess if I were to go out and, you know, do a bunch of drugs and sleep around, it would be hard to explain that to my wife and children that they are not victims. So,
well, and I think society becomes a victim, though, of immoral behavior. Remember, de Tocqueville taught that if we're America's great because America's good, if we jettison our moral religious bearings, there are victims. And the victim oftentimes might be yourself. For example, if you commit suicide, you can't say there's not a victim. There's a dead body. Well, it's yourself that might be the victim. That's true. But the same thing's true with some of these immorality choices people make. Your future spouse is a victim if you get some kind of venereal disease, you know, et cetera, et cetera. When you violate the commandments of God, there's a victim, and it might be yourself to be the victim. But there's no doubt that it's impossible to say they're not a victimless situation. We're all societally victims. What if everybody slept around? One of the great ways that you can tell is, what if everybody did it? What would happen? And you can tell that society would be destroyed. Everybody would be on drugs. There would be no trust in society because everybody would be sleeping with everybody. There's victims that you got to look at a micro and a macro scale sometimes to kind of put it in perspective. But make no mistake, there's victims in those crimes. It's not debatable. Now, I know the libertarians want to pretend it doesn't exist, but they can only pretend for so long. What if everybody in the society did it? What if everybody in the society literally did those things? That's one of the great ways you can tell if something's immoral or wrong, is if everybody in a society does something, it should be just fine. What if everybody went to church? What if everybody, you know what, worked hard and made a living? What if everybody, okay, so one of the great ways you can tell if something creates a victim or not is, what if everybody did it, what would happen? What if everybody was on drugs? What if everybody slept around and didn't obey a moral code of any kind? What if, okay, and so that's one great kind of a aptitude test, if you will, on if there's a victim. What if everybody did it, Eldon?
What if everybody had a firearm? There's a controversial one, but would that be a crime? No, that would not be a crime.
I think it'd be a blessing. The next thing I would say, though, is let's teach people how to use them properly so we don't have accidents. But other than that, I'd say it's great.
Right. But what of course, tyrants have wanted to do throughout history is disarm the civilians and say only government people should have weapons, have arms. Of course, there's reasons why they want to do that. They always use the excuse of safety. But just as an example, right? Just owning a firearm should not be a crime or considered a crime by government.
Amen to that, ladies and gentlemen. Right, when we come back, I want to talk more about this support for law enforcement officers. We need to protect families. There's a bond that should exist between the peace officers and the people. We need to talk about education. We need to talk about what we can do to help. How do we work together for the stability and safety of society? We'll talk about it with Eldon Stahl, JBS.org, in seconds.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pride.
The Biden administration is planning to announce sanctions on Russia as soon as today. Sources say it will target several individuals and entities. The package of sanctions targeting several Russian officials will be coupled with orders to expel some of them from the United States. The sanctions would be part of a set of responses by the U.S. government to a cybersecurity breach, which was identified in December and that the U.S. government said was likely orchestrated by Russia. Violent protests continue in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, as demonstrators clash with police following the apparent accidental death of 20-year-old Dante Wright. Ex-Brooklyn Center officer Kim Potter is charged with second-degree manslaughter in the shooting death. She has since posted $100,000 bond. A group of House Republicans Tuesday will introduce a constitutional amendment aimed at setting the number of Supreme Court justices at 9 in reaction to calls from Democrats to pack the court in an executive order by President Biden to study the topic. USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Allyn for our newest sponsor, Asset Strategies, or ASI for short. ASI is a precious metals powerhouse. They sell gold and silver. Never in history has there been a more important moment to buy gold and silver. ASI has been in business for 39 years. They've served over 20,000 clients and sold $5 billion worth of gold, silver, and precious metals with zero complaints. Last year, gold saw gains of 25%. Silver nearly doubled gold's performance. Now Democrats are in charge. Green New Deal, open borders, free healthcare for illegals, bailout broke cities and states. The debt is about to go through the stratosphere. The time to buy is now. The owners of ASI, Michael and Rich Chekin, have been my close personal friends for 16 years. ASI is the company I trust when it comes to buying and selling precious metals. Call now to receive a free consultation and a free 1 ounce silver eagle with every qualifying purchase when you mention the Wayne Allyn Show. Call 800-831-0007. That's 800-831-0007. Or visit assetstrategies.com.
President Biden's announcement of pulling all U.S. and NATO troops out of Afghanistan has been met with criticism. Dan Araki from the Ohio USA Radio News Bureau has more.
President Biden announced Wednesday that all American troops would be leaving Afghanistan by this September 11th. About 2,500 troops are still currently in the country. But the decision has been met with criticism. Admiral James Stavridis led NATO operations in Afghanistan for 4 years, and he tells MSNBC that he would have advised the president against pulling out and hopes the U.S. will continue to fund the Afghan military in their fight against the Taliban.
I don't know if the outcome is going to be better or worse, but I do know as a military officer, it's never a good idea to tell your opponents, we will be off the field by this date certain.
The United States entered Afghanistan October 7th, 2001. Congratulations to Chicago White Sox pitcher Carlos Rodon for throwing a no-hitter Wednesday night, beating the Cleveland Indians 8-0. This is USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Eldon Stahl on your radio. Promoting God, family, and country, protecting life, liberty, and property is who we are and what we do. That's our claim to fame, if you will, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about support for law enforcement officers. We're talking about families of those law enforcement officers. We're talking about protecting the bond that exists between the communities and law enforcement officers. Okay, we can do so through education, through programs, briefings. We can provide charitable support for police officers that have lost their lives in the line of duty. There's a lot we can do, ladies and gentlemen. We can provide protective equipment. We can provide training. We can provide memorials. There's a lot that can be done. There's a website that highlights a lot of this. LECF-INC.org. And this is really kind of an important thing we need to realize. The police should not be our enemy. Sadly, the media and society and government and everything else has divided the police from the people. We've got to change that. And the way we do that is we back our constitutional sheriffs. We support our police officers. We help train them in de-escalation tactics to not view the public as enemy number one, etc. There's a lot we can do through these programs, through this these efforts, Eldon. And I really think we need to make a huge dent in this serious problem now. We can't just run around and defund the cops. Now, maybe some less money would be necessary if more people were self-governed. I get it. But at the same time, we can't just look at the cops as the enemies and defund them. That would be pure insanity. There's a lot of work we can do, though, to work on this relationship, this cooperative effort, this, what do we call it? Protecting the bond is the term that it should be used here, between people and those police officers that serve them. Self-governed people don't have a problem with the cops. The cops don't have a problem with self-governed people either, would be the point. Eldon?
Yeah, you know, one thing I noticed very quickly when I was spent 2 years in Argentina and Buenos Aires is that there was not really a bond between the police and the people. If there was not a police officer within sight, basically people said, we can do whatever I want. I can do whatever I want. So one stark illustration of this was went to a local small grocery store, and their security system was they hired, kind of an elderly gentleman, but he stood just outside the door with a shotgun. So anybody that happened to steal something, that was pretty much the end of them. And that was their security system. Now, of course, that gets rid of due process very quickly, right? But they did, for one thing, they didn't have really any faith in the local police. There was two sets of police. They had either the militarized police, which they feared, or the police that were basically useless, that didn't even have any sort of weapon, and they rode around on bicycles. And those people, you know, they didn't respect either, because what could they really do for you? But we in America, we have actually locally controlled, locally accountable police. Now, it's being eroded, but Law Enforcement Charitable Foundation is something that we can utilize to, as you say, protect the bond that exists between community and local law enforcement. They do a number of things. One thing that they do not do, they do not, as far as grants, they don't give military equipment to local law enforcement, like unfortunately the federal government is doing. I would say that erodes the bond between the people. But training, let's say in constitutional principles, kind of like CSPOA, but let's say an officer dies in the line of duty. They have some family members that are surviving. So what can you do to help them out? Well, they may have children. They can give educational grants to that family to help them if they want to have their children go for free to Freedom Project Academy. So there's one example. Also for protective equipment, body armor, there's actually a grant application on the website, and you can look at that and say, okay, if your local law enforcement has a certain need that LECF might be able to fill, then great. They might ask you to do some local fundraising. Certainly people would, if there's a real need and you can demonstrate to the local people that that can be part of it, but it, you know, come up with maybe a certain percentage locally. It's been a great blessing to people across the country since it started in 2016. One of the things LACF does is they have an intelligence brief. You've probably heard of the Southern Poverty Law Center brief, which decides to tell people all about these terrible nefarious groups that support the Constitution as if they're should be treated as terrorists. The LACF intelligence brief is kind of the antidote to that. And you can read that on their website as well, lacf.org.
LECF is in Frank. LECF-INC.org. They're doing a tremendous job. And one of the things I think we really need to focus on is this civility idea. We don't need angst between the police and the people. What we need to do is create cooperation. And it starts with trying to understand. It starts with putting yourself in the shoes of the other party. You know, law enforcement have become trigger happy. But you know what? They're not trigger happy because the people they deal with are just so civil and kind and obedient and patient and self-governed that there's no problem. The reason they're trigger happy and the reason they're so hostile and think the enemy is public number one is the enemy is because that they deal with just trouble day after day after day after to where, you know what, you can't help to some degree but get hardened and go, you know what, I want to come home to my wife tonight. I don't want to. And so you say, I got to take action quick and decisive because if I don't, you know what? I'll be the one in a body bag. And so this isn't created by self-governed people, by religious people that obey commandments and obey God's laws and obey proper, legitimate societal guidelines. The Ten Commandments come to mind for starters. Thou shalt not kill, etc. If people don't violate those things, if the cops don't get hurt and don't die and don't have trouble on a consistent basis, cops won't become hardened against the people. So I'm not here to blame the cops. I'm here to blame us as individuals in society. We're not a very self-governed people. If we were, we wouldn't need as many cops. And the cops certainly wouldn't be running around thinking that everybody's a bad guy. They've been kind of trained by reality to believe much of that. Now, I'm not defending their view of that. And I'm not defending their behavior related to that. But I'm telling you, it didn't come from nowhere, Eldon. That's important to understand.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Historically, people that have wanted to have, you might say, tyrannical power over their people, they've promoted what we would call vice. Because they know that the people that are kind of their time is occupied with all kinds of vices, that they are more easy to govern because they are... they have all kinds of societal problems, you might say, and they have a demand for heavy-handed government rather than you might say, governing their own actions without the need of government, some sort of government outside intervention to restore just simple order in society. That's always been an interest of tyrants, is to promote vice rather than virtue. Certainly... there's always going to be some level of that, but we don't want to increase that or promote that or give opportunity to more vice. that works in the
amen to that.
The interest of
but here's what's interesting: they tell you that the John Birch Society or the New American is anti-government. They say Sam Bushman is anti-government, etc. But let's be clear: let's by their fruits shall ye know them, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Liberty Roundtable Live, Eldon Stahl, Liberty Roundtable Live with the John Birch Society. We're promoting support for law enforcement officers and families. Our goal is to protect the bond between community and local law enforcement. We want to do it through education, through programs, through funding, through charitable donations and charitable support for families of police officers killed in the line of duty. We want to provide grants to provide law enforcement agencies with protective gear and equipment. We want to help with training. We want to help with memorials when things don't go well. LECF-INC.org. LECF-INC.org. That's what we're advocating, folks. The civility, the morality, the working together. Eldon?
That's right. We're not anti-government. That would be anarchy. We're not for anarchy. And basically, communists and the fascists, they've always been for anarchy as a way to build support for total government. Of course,
hang tight. Liberty Roundtable Live in seconds.
The runner on third takes a short lead. Elwood glances over. Now back to the plate. He sets the pitch. It's swung on strike three. They've won it. They have won it. World champions. Jim, what's it like down on the field?
John, it's a madhouse down here. I'm trying to get to Bob Elwood, the winning pitcher. Bob, how does it feel? Winning the seventh game on a strikeout.
Yeah, I thought he'd be looking for a slider, so I came on with my fastball.
World champions. Is this the greatest moment of your life?
Absolutely not. Jim, the best moments for me are breakfast with the kids. Long walks with my wife, just holding her hand, you know?
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Jim, when was the last time you held your wife's hand?
Well, it's been a while.
I tell you, you need to step up to the plate, Jim.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. I got another story that I want to discuss. It's an article or a headline just released now. We've heard about packing the Supreme Court by the Democrats for a while now. And right now, there's 9 Supreme Court justices, from what I understand. Historically, it's been 7 or 9 for quite some time. Right now, it's 9, right? Well, anyway, now Democrats prepare to pack the Supreme Court they want. 4 more justices. Eldon, you want to respond to this one?
Well, basically, this is they've basically said we want to get complete power by any means necessary. This is one of their tactics. Another one has been to try to get rid of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. Another one has tried to add 4 more U.S. Senate seats by adding 2 more states. To try to solidify, just make sure that there would be no opposition to their push for absolute power. This is something that we need to push against. But the other side of it is we need to, for a long time, we have needed to push against the idea of judicial supremacy. If we would not, as a people, have accepted the idea that the Supreme Court is the last word on any matter under the sun, then, this really wouldn't be that much of a threat. And they could add 100 judges and we'd say, well, okay, that's just their opinion. We're going to nullify that. We're going to go against that and not enforce it. But that's where we are today. A large number of the people have said we've got to accept the idea that the Supreme Court can tell us that, the Constitution provides for giving puppies and kitties to everybody or whatever they dream up.
How many judges historically have we had? Because as far as I understand, it's been 7 sometimes and 9 sometimes, right? But I don't know that it's ever been more than 9, right?
I don't know on that. I'd have to look that up. But it's not in the Constitution how many judges there should be. But, I think the Congress has avoided trying to add more judges because of the controversy around it, but it really should not be that controversial. Congress could add, however many of the judges they want to. But also Congress has the ability to, the Senate has the ability to say, we're not going to approve that nominee. We're just not.
That's right. So just so everybody understands, you got to ask the question, why do 9 justices serve on the Supreme Court in the first place? If we're going to talk about adding 4 more, we got to kind of understand it historically. And the answer is because the Constitution for the United States of America does not stipulate how many justices should serve on the court. In fact, that number fluctuated until 1869. Did you know that?
I didn't. That's a good little tidbit. Yeah.
Really
what's gone on is we've established the Supreme Court as this sort of oligarchy over our, you know, rather than having this, the U.S. Constitution be supreme, we've established the Supreme Court as supreme and as what form of government we should have and what it should look like and what should be the supreme law of the land. The question should really be, should we be ruled by an oligarchy as the supreme ruler of our nation, or should we go back to limited government under the U.S. Constitution? If we just said, hey, we're not going to live under an oligarchy, then it wouldn't matter how many justices there would be on the Supreme Court.
Now listen carefully to me. Before 1969, the Congress would adjust how many justices they wanted based on political opinions and purposes and et cetera. Believe it or not, at some times in America, there was only five justices. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
The U.S. Constitution is history, silent on how many judges. All right. Now I find that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Believe it or not, the Congress, not the Constitution, decides how many Supreme Court justices there are. So this is nothing new, is your point. And here is the, in my opinion, quintessential point. They can make it 13 if they want to. We can nullify if we want to. The separation of powers still is in play, regardless of what they do. So they've done this for political purposes forever. This is nothing new, people. So I'm not for necessarily increasing the number of Supreme Court justices. I'm not for packing the courts at all. And so I hope that the Senate rejects it. Nevertheless, even if they do, I believe Eldon's point is absolutely the focus point. So what? We can nullify. You guys get out of control and, hey, we're not going to tolerate it. Believe it or not, when George Washington signed the act into law, created the Supreme Court justices, he set the Supreme Court justices at the number six. Did you know that? Why
wow.
six, you say? Because Supreme Court justices back in those days were also appointed to sit on federal circuit courts, in which there were 13 in 1789, one for each state. Each circuit court would be presided over by three judges, one district court judge from the state, and two Supreme Court justices. The justices had to spend almost the entire year traveling, by the way, back in those days. So that's kind of interesting as well. The traveling conditions at that time obviously were horrendous. So it was pretty much a brutal job back in the day. But to limit the geographical area that the justices had to travel, the Judiciary Act of 1789 divided the circuit courts into three different regions, Eastern, Middle, and Southern. So anyway, they had six Supreme Court justices, two to preside in each of the three regions. I find that stuff fascinating because we get all caught up in this, like we're going to riot. Let them make the number 13. Let them make the number 5. Let them make it 6. Let them keep it at 9. Let them make it 7. What we need to focus on is the checks and balances. And if they get out of control, we need to nullify now. And so I really think we need to take the column here about this and not get all up in arms and get all crazy like, oh my gosh, 9 is just the number that everybody's been for. Well, it's been pretty stable since 1789. But no one quibbled even at the time that 6 was an even number, which created the possibility that you could have three split decisions because in each three regions, you would have two justices. And if the same case became before each region, you could literally have three split decisions. They never even thought about it because all the judges were Federalists and they didn't foresee great disagreement, said Marcus. Plus, you didn't have all six justices appearing at the Supreme Court at the same time because of travel reasons. Very interesting, different dynamic than we see today, sir.
Yeah, very different. Nowadays, we're basically arguing over, well, how many oligarchs should we have ruling over us as a people? Well, how about none? How about we, you know, there's a revolutionary idea. How about no oligarchs and we just obey the Constitution? But that's why it's such a controversy. Anytime someone's nominated for the Supreme Court, what is your position on Roe v. Wade? What is your position on blah, blah, blah? Well, it shouldn't really matter because if they make some bonehead decision, the states can come back and say, you know what, that's your opinion, and we're just not going to enforce that. End of story.
You know, I personally support an idea of reducing the number of Supreme Court picks, and because I, in my opinion, the Supreme Court, the judiciary branch was meant to be the weakest branch of the three, if you will. And so I would personally support reducing the number of justices, letting them have less power, not more. The more power, the greater their number, the more political it becomes, the greater manipulations they can create and wreaking havoc on the people for political purposes. I'd reduce them down to five if it were me. And I would deny president's picks. I'd deny that being a political discussion altogether if it were me. So very, very interesting discussion about the Supreme Court. But people are freaking out because Democrats are preparing to pack the court. Hey, man, it's been done before. It'll be done again. No big deal. Our power lies in our states and their ability to nullify. Our power relies in the checks and balances, ladies and gentlemen. Our power lies in self-governed religious people that understand the proper role of government. And we depend on the checks and balances for stability, not on a single branch of government with almost godlike authority. We don't believe in God makers in America, ladies and gentlemen. We believe in the rule of God's law. And we believe in the power of self-governed, moral individuals that obey those laws by choice, by using their agency wisely. The exceptions must be dealt with, but they must remain exceptions, Eldon.
Yeah, that's right. You know, one great example of nullification in history is the nullification of the Fugitive Slave Act by the state of Wisconsin, the Supreme Court even of Wisconsin. They had a fellow that helped violate the Fugitive Slave Act, refused to deliver a fellow that was accused of being a runaway slave back to his alleged owner. And his name was Joshua Glover. And what happened was the state Supreme Court nullified the decision of even the U.S. Supreme Court, said, you know, we're not going to deliver this guy to the federal government to be tried for violating the Fugitive Slave Act. We're not. It also illustrates the fact, of course, that nullification had nothing to do with supporting slavery. It was used in the exact opposite way. But we can certainly use nullification to enforce the Constitution. And
in other words, back in the day, it was used to make men free, sir. Let's be clear.
Yes, it was. It was.
And I would submit, justly so.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that, of course, intended to be used to enforce the U.S. Constitution, uphold our rights as individuals, as a free people. It's not something to say, okay, we're just going to pick and choose what laws we're going to obey and what not. It should be honoring our oath under the Constitution. And state legislators, sheriffs, a lot of people can play a part in that. The governors, they should. They should stand up to this tyranny.
Well, it's important to know that a fully informed jury is on the same lines, where the idea is to say, hey, we need to judge the law and the justness of that law, as well as we need to judge the case before us. And if the case before us doesn't support a just law, we need to jettison the injustice of the law as much as we need to deal with the case before us. And this fully informed understanding relates to how the Supreme Court justices should behave. They're there. People think they're there for life. They're there upon good behavior for life. And if they abuse their judicial power and become activists on the bench and try to make law or interpret or manipulate law in unjust ways, they need to be jettisoned and impeached and removed from office as well. And the Founding Fathers back in the day didn't have any qualms about that either, sir. Anyway, thanks
That's
for being
right.
alongside of the ride, Eldon. We'll have you back soon, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much. Hope you have a wonderful day.
There he goes, Eldon Stahl, doing a phenomenal job. JBS.org, thenewamerican.com. Incredible organizations doing phenomenal work. Liberty Roundtable Live aims to bring all the good people doing all the wonderful things in America to your attention. That's who we are. That's what we do. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net. Spread the word, donate, share the truth. We the people can restore America. This nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.